Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Neil Langto's new book is The Approaching Storm: Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and Their Clash Over America's Future. This is progressivism, which is understood as a domestic reform movement in the United States, but it comes up against the world of crisis in Europe. The armies, the Allies and the Axis, the Allies, the Germans, are driven by the Kaiser. The English and the French don't have one leadership, but they do have a concern to overwhelm the Germans and the Austrians. Russia is in the war at this point, and the massacres are momentous. They're transforming Europe for the next 50, 80 years because a generation is being exhausted and massacred. The best of the generation, the volunteers, the young people from Paris, from London, from Berlin. And we come now to the U.S. staying back until it's May 7th, 1915. There has been an incident where a German submarine caused the death of an American traversing the Atlantic. But the Lusitania is notable in that the number of Americans are killed, and it immediately introduces a crisis into the progressive. Let's start with Wilson, Neil. His first reaction for the dead American previously in the spring was to write a sharp note to Germany. What is his reaction to Lusitania? Does he understand right away it's a crisis? And who is Colonel House?
He does understand that this is a very troubling situation. The previous death of an American citizen, Leon Thrasher, had really concerned people in the administration, especially his Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan. And now with the Lusitania, we have over 100 Americans being killed. It's multiplied considerably. There's going to be immense pressure on Wilson to do something. There's going to be pressure from Colonel House. We'll talk about Colonel House. Colonel House was his advisor and close friend, who held this incredible influence in the Wilson administration, even though he didn't have a formal title. And at that very moment, he was in Europe because Wilson had allowed him to go to Europe and sort of talk to the various heads of states, like Jane Addams had done, and see what was in the wind and see if there was might be a role for America in this crisis as far as peacemaking is concerned. And House pretty much told him after Lusitania was sunk that, you know, we need to pretty much sever ties with Germany. And of course, when you do that, that usually means war. And there were others in his administration who were just as warlike at that moment, saying, we have to, you know, if we're going to have any respect around the globe, we have to go to war over this. But Wilson himself was not keen on doing this. He did not feel that the provocation was serious enough to go forward. On the other hand, he didn't want us to look like we were completely lying down for Germany. He wanted some sort of response, some sort of reply to Germany that would suggest that, you know, if this sort of thing happens again, it is going to lead to a split and a split with Germany and potential war in the future. The country was not sure what Wilson was going to do. And then Wilson, a couple of days after the Lusitania, came to Philadelphia to speak before a group of newly made American citizens, immigrants who had recently gotten their citizenship. And he made this very famous speech where he said, he made the point that there is such a thing as a man who is too proud to fight, a country that is too proud to fight. You know, that in other words, a country that knows it is right does not need to fight. And when he said that, most of the country understood that we're not going to go to war over this incident. Of course, Theodore Roosevelt was not very happy with that at the time.
Roosevelt was tied down by the Republican Party. A man by the name of Barnes, who headed the Republican Party in New York, had tangled him up in a lawsuit that was costing TR a great deal of money, very good lawyers, and the idea was that TR was a threat to the party, had been a threat in 1912, and they were trying to wreck him. And The trial was ongoing while the Lusitania is ongoing. Now, TR has time to talk in several directions. However, my sense is that the Republican Party was bothered by him. It was a burden to the party. Why so? Was the Republican Party understood as anti-progressive at this point?
Well, Republicans, like the Democrats, had a progressive wing and a Democratic wing, although most of the progressives within the Republican Party had broken away to this new progressive party, Roosevelt's progressive/Bullman's party. So those who were left, the Republicans left in the party at this point, tended to lean more towards the conservative end, and they still saw Roosevelt as a thorn in their side. However, they were aware that Roosevelt would have a lot to do with the 1916 election as far as who he decided to support, if he decided to run again. So they did not want to completely cut him off. But the Barnes trial, as you mentioned, is really interesting because Roosevelt's fighting for his political life. If he loses this case, it is going to cost him an enormous amount of money and be very damaging in the public eye. And he gives basically a virtuoso performance at the Barnes trial. He's on the stand for several days and he gets on the front page and he wins this trial in the public eye. And of course, he eventually will be acquitted also in the libel charge as well. So it is a successful time for him in that regard, but he's very frustrated with how Wilson's handling this crisis. And he does believe that he makes a statement at the time that there are things worse than war. In other words, it's like losing ourself as a nation and losing our pride and our respect around the globe is worse than us going to war at this point. On the other hand, we were not military prepared to go to war. So that's always another part of the picture that has to be considered.
Jane Addams has an ally, William Jennings Bryan, then Secretary of State, a man who's run for president three times already, representing the progressive movement, the populist progressive movement out of the Midwest. Bryan and Wilson do not share anything, as far as I can tell. And Bryan is a trouble to Wilson. Eventually, he will leave. Does Bryan have good correspondence with Adams at this point, or are they separate parts of the peace movement?
There are some letters between the two of them at this time. Bryan, I think, was someone who had such an enormous following around the country, especially in the rural parts of the country. People loved him, absolutely adored him. And he is someone who had, for a long time, had been a pacifist. So I think the pacifist movement as a whole embraced him. Adams herself will of course at times write to him and try to get him to endorse or at least become part of some of their issues. And when Jane Addams goes over to Europe, and while Bryan is still Secretary of State, she does get Bryan to contact the European powers to let them know she's coming, and also even to let the Germans know, so to keep your submarines on guard so you don't end up sinking the ship that Jane Addams and her group are on at this time. Bryan is someone who, after the Lusitania crisis, believed that Wilson was acting too provocatively, that he was going to involve the United States in a war. He believed that all this should be set aside for after the war, that we should not involve ourselves in Europe whatsoever. So he pretty much stands by that, and eventually he decides to resign his position in the cabinet over this very issue.
Wilson denounces Bryan, calls him an awful creature, and he has moral repugnance for him. What was the dispute?
I think one of the things that Wilson didn't like about Bryan was the issue that he didn't stand by him. He felt in some way very disappointed that in the midst of this crisis that Bryan decided, I can no longer work with you. I'm going to leave the cabinet. So I think he was disappointed in that regard. On the other hand, he felt that Bryan was ultimately unsuited to be Secretary of State. In some ways, he got the job because he had been a leader of the Democratic Party for years, and they had to find him a position. They gave him Secretary of State. But a lot of people did not feel that was really Bryan's forte. He was not as bad as a lot of people, really bashed him at the time and said he was incompetent. But I don't think he was quite as bad as people made him out to be. He was a bit naive. He had these idea of these cooling off treaties where countries would wait for a year before they went to war and things like that. Some of that was naive, but I think he was well-intentioned. But whether some of his ideas applied to the European massacre at this time was questionable. And I think on one level, Wilson was sort of, okay, I'm glad Bryan's out. We can get someone in who might be a little bit more suitable. And Wilson ultimately wanted to be his own Secretary of State.
He was, basically.
That is true.
Let us observe that, Neil, here. You make the very strong case that he offers the He offers State to House, who declines. He wants to be an independent actor. He offers it, and he then gives it to Lansing, who was the law clerk at the State Department, and Wilson didn't care for him even slightly over the next years. He doesn't listen to House unless he agrees with him. He doesn't consult with his cabinet in any fashion. He didn't consult with his first wife. Now, Edith Bowling is striking because she's not an educated woman, and she's ferociously loyal to Wilson, so much so that she maneuvers, that would be the word, to make him understand that House is not trustworthy. Is that how she does it?
Yeah, it's amazing that almost she'd known Wilson for maybe a few months, but he's madly in love with her, and he's showing her all of his correspondence, and he shows her some of the correspondence from House, and she immediately gets in a dig and says, "I don't think he's very strong. I don't think his writing's very strong." I mean, she pretty much is dissing him, to use a modern term. And Wilson, I think, is a little taken aback. But, I mean, she constantly gets her little digs in towards House. And I think it can't help but affect Wilson, who at that point was, you know, very loyal to House and thought House didn't want anything except to serve me and things like that. I think Edith Wilson probably saw House as a potential threat to her own relationship, and therefore she tried to minimize House's role. And over time, that she will succeed in eventually completely diminishing House's role, but that comes later on.
The book is The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and Their Clash Over America's Future. Neil Langto is the author. When we come back, Teddy Roosevelt and 1916. I'm John Bash.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.